As long as it's just the non-conference games, I'm okay, because the magazine is based on conference records. So all my predictions for the conferences, when you see the teams stacked in order, that's how I think they're going to finish in the conference race. It has nothing to do with the non-conference. The only two pages that might get affected a little bit are the top 50 page, where it is the non-conference. It is factored into that. But for the most part, for the magazine, if they're playing conference football this year, Matt, I'm happy. And I'd like to see some teams play a full slate. This is Phil Steele, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
All right, let's welcome in the guru of college football, Phil Steele of Phil Steele's College Football Preview. Phil, appreciate you making some time for us on The Morning Rush, man.
Hey, real pleasure being on with you guys.
So, a lot of people were really excited to see you come out with your all-SEC list. You had six Razorbacks on it. I know really the headline of that list was Rakeem Boyd on second team all-SEC, and he's been second team in a lot of different places, Phil. Do you see a scenario by season end under Ken O'Brien's high-flying offense where he could be named first team all-SEC?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you go back to last year. Last year, Rakeem rushed for 6.2 yards per carry, and this year they're probably going to emphasize the run a little bit more. They're big up front on the offensive line, and they got some guy as a head coach, Sam Pittman, knows a thing or two about offensive lines. At Georgia, I'm on the Joe Moore Award Committee. We have great respect for what Pittman did with the offensive lines at Georgia, even at Arkansas before that. So I think Boyd running behind that will be in good shape. And you take a look at a player like Kylan Hill for Mississippi State. He's going to be in the Mike Leach offense now. So how many rushing yards is he going to get, or is he going to be more of a receiving run? There are great running backs in the SEC. Najee Harris, Zamir White, both what I rated number one coming out. But, yeah, Boyd can definitely step in there and grab that one spot.
Phil, you bring up Sam Pittman. It seems like when he was initially hired, people were a little skeptical. Offensive line coach moving to the head coach in the toughest division in college football. But I think he's picked up a little bit in terms of college football analysts in the last couple months, what he's done in recruiting, who he's hired in Barry Odom and Ken O'Brien. Have you bought in a little more to Sam Pittman and what he can do at Arkansas?
Well, you know, I think the one situation which is tough is this year, because as a first-year head coach, no spring practices, didn't get a chance to learn the players probably as much as he would have liked to. I think it's tough for any first-year head coach this year. But overall, like I said, being on the Joe Moore Award Committee, we've got great respect for Sam Pittman, produced great offensive lines each and every year at Georgia, and I do like what he's been doing recruiting. I do like what he's been doing with the team. So I think he'll get the job done at Arkansas. It's tough going from Bielema's big offensive line to a more mobile offensive line, no, going back to a big offensive line, three head coaches in 4 years. It is a tough situation this year. So I will say to Arkansas fans, cut the guy a little slack this year if it's not a seven-win season, because it is a very tough situation to step into. But I think he'll get the job done.
Phil, let's talk about the personnel that Sam does have coming back on his offensive line. You got some juniors and seniors in four spots at tackles and at the guard, and then it's at center with Ty Clary, Myron Cunningham, and Dalton Wagner at the tackle spot, Shane Clinton, a redshirt junior at left guard. What do you see as the potential with some of those guys in the junior and senior classes on that offensive line to be potential starters?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you look at the veteran offensive line they have coming back, that's a good thing. And the one thing Sam Pittman wanted to do, he wanted to add size back on that O-line. As you know, the previous staff wanted more mobile, smaller offensive linemen, but they were able to add some weight. And Coach Pittman was glad about the weight that they were able to put on. So it's tough switching up schemes like they have over 3 years, but I think he's going to mold a pretty good offensive line, as he's done everywhere he's been. You touched on Ty Clary at the center spot. He's a guy that's got this is basically his fourth year as a starter. He started those last four games in 17. He started the last 2 years at center. I think he's going to be one of the better centers in the country. The tackles are in good position. You got a couple of big boys out there on the outside. Dalton Wagner is coming in, and he's a 6'9", 311-pound guy. Myron Cunningham, 6'7", 319. So I like the size on the offensive line, and with Pittman being the head coach, you know he'll mold a good group. I would have liked to have had him get an entire spring with this unit.
Let's talk about Felipe Franks in the quarterback spot. Obviously coming from Florida, graduate transfer. How well does he fit in with the system Kendall Briles is bringing to Arkansas?
I think he'll fit in just well. You know, very, very good. Briles, I think, is a type of offensive coordinator that builds his offense around the quarterback's strengths. So he'll take Felipe Franks' strengths and use those. Frank's much maligned at Florida at times, but the guy's got a very strong arm. He can make all the throws. He's got great size. He was a team leader at Florida. He was always in the weight room, and you know, his problem probably was recognizing coverage a little bit there. But Kendall Briles is a really good offensive coordinator, and I think you'll be able to work with him on that.
We're speaking with Phil Steele of Phil Steele's College Football Preview here on the Morning Rush. Phil, I heard you talking to Matt Moscona earlier this week or last week or so, and you guys were talking about the prospect and the idea of just having conference games or non-conference games and kind of how your rankings are affected on that. Which way are you leaning, particularly in the SEC, on how many games they're going to play this upcoming football season?
You know, if everybody plays a conference schedule, I'm fine with it. I ideally would love to see teams like the SEC play 12 games. And, you know, you have a team like Notre Dame out there that is on Arkansas' schedule. And Notre Dame's willing to play that game. Arkansas's willing to play that game. Let's play it. I love these non-conference games. I think we will miss some of the great non-conference matchups that were scheduled. Washington was hosting Michigan. Oregon was hosting Ohio State. USC was playing Alabama. USC was playing Notre Dame. We're going to miss out on some big-time matchups like that. But, guys, as long as we got conference football, I am thrilled with it this year. And, you know, I hope the SEC plays all 12.
And, Phil, when you were talking about some of the teams within this conference, you mentioned Bama, you mentioned Georgia. But one of the teams that you're high on this year is Texas A&M. I remember Kellen Mond at SEC Media Days this past season told us he thought he was the best quarterback in the SEC. Well, Joe Burrow was this past season. Do you think Kellen Mond, Jimbo Fisher, and Texas A&M can finally take that next step to make Jimbo actually worthy of his contract this year?
Yeah, and I'll go back to last year's conversation I had with Coach Fisher and going over the team with him. And I had looked at the schedule prior, and I was like, wow, that is a brutal schedule. And as it was, you guys know Texas A&M played three number one ranked teams last year. Mm-hmm. Clemson was number one when they played them. Alabama number one when they played them. LSU number one when they played them. They also took on number four Georgia, number eight Auburn. That's a brutal schedule. And when I was going over the team last year with Coach Fisher, I was amazed at the lack of seniors. I mean, it was almost like, wow, this entire team's going to be back next year, Coach. I said, I'm going to put you on the cover of my magazine, my national magazine, next year. And, well, it's next year, and Texas A&M's schedule got lighter. I rate it the number 66 schedule this year. It's 52 spots lower than last year. I don't know if last year they played those five top 10 teams. I don't know if they're going to play more than one top 10 team this year. Then you look at the experience chart. They jump all the way up to number 10 on my experience chart. 17 returning starters, practically the entire team is back. And the thing I love about Kellen Mond, if you're going to play quarterback for Jimbo Fisher, you got to be able to take coaching. That means the coach is going to say some things that might not make you happy, but if you can take that coaching, you'll be a better quarterback. Kellen Mond's that guy. So I think he will be one of the better quarterbacks of the SEC this year. The offensive line, I rate number 13 in the country. The defensive line, number 12. And I made Texas A&M my number one surprise team this year. And a surprise team is a non-top 10 team that I think can make the playoff. 2 years ago, it was Notre Dame. Notre Dame wasn't in the top 10, made the playoff. A couple years back, Washington did that. Last year, I had Utah. They almost did it last year. They won that doggone Pac-12 title game. They would have been there. But A&M's my number one surprise team this year. Watch out for the Aggies.
Phil, what were the biggest challenges you had this year with coronavirus and all the uncertainty in the world? What were the biggest challenges you had in putting together your preview magazine this year?
I would say it came back in March and April, and that's when the governor of Ohio shut down all the offices. So my entire staff went on unemployment, and I'm in an empty office for 7 weeks, I believe it was, just toiling away at the magazine by myself. And I said, you know, we normally send the last page to the press at the end of May. And in March, I'm like, it's impossible. I don't even have my staff here. I can't put this thing out at the end of May. And I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to talk to the head coaches. And then as things got better and the office opened back up, the coaches were very receptive. I talked to over 110 of the coaches this year, spending about an hour per team with each one, going over every player on the team with them. And then it started to really ramp up for the season, got excited again. And we sent the magazine to the press July 8th, which is much later than any other year. But we already got the magazines back from the press. We're sending them out on the trucks already. We've never had a turnaround time that quick. And it's because we printed less magazines. We went from printing 200,000 magazines to just 50,000 this year. And we only have one national cover as opposed to printing the nine different covers. But probably the biggest thing was the shutdown for 7-8 weeks in March and April.
Any difference in the level of information coaches were able to give you just based on the fact that spring practices didn't happen? You got schools like Arkansas, Ole Miss, Missouri, Mississippi State, where coaches, you know, didn't know their teams as well, being new coaches and haven't been on the field with their team. What challenges did that present in you being able to get the in-depth information you normally get?
Yeah, and it didn't affect me with any experienced coach, because most experienced coaches are like, you know what, Phil, we had our off-season winter conditioning. I know the player shape they were coming in. Yeah, we missed out on 11 practices, but no big deal. You know, put the ball in the field, we'll be ready to play. But with the new head coaches, there was some of that. You go back to Michigan State, for example. Their head coach not only came in, he came in after the recruiting class was signed. With Mark D'Antonio signed the class, then stepped out of Michigan State. So Mel Tucker only has 10 returning starters on that Michigan State team. Didn't have the benefit of a spring practice. And at least first-year head coaches got to go out and recruit their players, and they know the freshmen. He doesn't even really know the freshmen as well as he would like. So I think he's in a tough situation. Coach Pippen's not in a great situation not having spring. But for the most part, the majority of the coaches, I got the same amount of information level that I would had they even had spring practice.
Talking with Phil Steele here on the Morning Rush. Phil, one of the more interesting storylines that came out this week is USC transfer JT Daniels, who was given immediate eligibility by the NCAA at Georgia. I was kind of surprised to see this. Him, Jamie Newman going at it. You got Brock Vandergriff down there as well. What do you make of him getting immediate eligibility, and how do you see the quarterback situation shaking down there in Athens?
You know, I've watched both Jamie Newman and JT Daniels, and I, you know, coming in, JT Daniels was the higher-rated quarterback, but Jamie Newman is a guy that really impressed me last year at Wake Forest. I mean, when he had his receivers healthy, that would be the first 8 games of the year, Jamie Newman was dynamic, and he's a big guy. He's 6'4", he's 230. You might watch him play, you might compare him a little bit to Cam Newton with the size he's got, the arm strength he has. He's mobile. And like I said, he was a very accomplished passer for Wake Forest. Then he lost his top two receivers. Numbers went down sort of a little bit at the end of the year, but he had two quality guys there. So I think Jamie Newman, with the fact he's been there longer, would still be my favorite to win the job over JT Daniels. But whichever way you look at it, I don't think they're in too bad a shape. Losing a longtime starter like Jake Fromm, but replacing him with Newman and Daniels, that's pretty good. And I actually rate Georgia's defense number one in the country. They have my number 5 rated defensive line, number 1 set of linebackers, number 4 DBs. So when I look at Georgia, I think that they're a top-notch team this year, provided the biggest question mark is the offensive line. They not only lose 4 starters, they lose Sam Pittman.
Phil, when you think about quarterbacks, which is what we're talking about, there's going to be the Heisman contenders, the big dogs, you're thinking Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, but more of the dark horse side of things, whether it's Kyle Trask, whether it's Miles Brennan and others, who are some of your dark horse quarterbacks that you think have a chance to win the Heisman Trophy in 2020?
Well, you know, I'm going to throw out one guy that is probably not very much on the radar, is Derek King of Miami.
Okay.
I watched this kid play at Houston. He's dynamic. I mean, he can hurt you running, he can hurt you passing, and he's stepping into a pretty good situation because Miami got poor quarterback play the last couple years. He greatly upgrades that. They've got talent surrounding him, and Miami's my number one most improved team in the country. So I think you're going to see their record go from 6-7 last year up to double-digit wins, provided they play 12 games, or let's say the losses cut down to just 1 or 2 this year. And that makes De'Ara King one of those players that could be a dark horse Heisman Trophy candidate. Other quarterbacks to look at, you know, you would take a look at maybe an Alan Bowman of Texas Tech. If this guy can stay healthy, he'll put up some big-time stats. And I think he would have a chance of working into the mix at that point.
Phil, the likelihood is the crowd sizes are going to be a fraction of what they normally are in games. Your book measures everything and takes into account home field advantages. What's the venue this year that's going to take the biggest hit as far as advantage by not having the home field crowd? You look at it all. Who's going to lose the most edge this year by not having the home crowd?
I'm going to go out of the box on this one a little bit, and I'm going to pick two teams, and they're from a place where you don't anticipate crowds. You don't really think, but Oregon and Washington, because those are two stadiums that aren't, 100,000, but they're big enough, and those crowds are loud. Washington and Oregon, you go into Autzen Stadium, it's one of the loudest stadiums out there. Washington, same thing, and I think those two stadiums losing their fan base. They've had both have great home records. You look at the Ducks, they've only lost two home games the last 3 years. Washington's a team that's only lost 13 home games the last 9 years. I think those two will be affected. And then naturally, SEC, you're talking about some of the best fan bases in college football. So going into Jordan-Hare and playing Auburn or LSU in Death Valley, if there's no fans or there's a handful of fans, naturally you have to take that 5 or 6 point home field edge and lessen it.
Phil, let me top off the interview with this. I'll let you give your spiel for a sec. Why buy your magazine over Athlon, over Lindy's, and other college football magazines out there?
Well, pure information. And it costs more than every other magazine out there. I'll go out and say that. But, I mean, it's like getting 130 different media guides rolled into one. And the beautiful thing about it is if you had 130 media guides on your desk, it would take you forever to find the information you want. But I've got all 130 paid teams laid out in the same format. And we give you the same amount of coverage on Arkansas State that you do on Alabama. Two full pages. You want to know who the starting left tackle is for any team, you can close your eyes, point to the part of the page where the left tackle is, and you'll know where to find them. We want to know a record for a team from 5 years ago. Once again, you know exactly where to look. You want to know a score from a game 3 years ago? You know exactly where to look. A stat from last year? You know exactly where to look. It's all in the same spot, every page. And I talked to 110 of the 130 coaches out there. They're in the best shape. And we don't give you just a starting lineup or a two deep. We give you a three or four deep on each team. And not just the player's height and weight, but a little background on each one. So it really has about four times the amount of information. It's quick, easy reference. It's even quicker and easy reference than the internet. Like if I asked you 10 questions, who's the starting left tackle at Ole Miss? What was Mississippi State's record 3 years ago? What was the score in this game? You could find it in the magazine in about a minute, minute and a half. Meanwhile, if you went to the team's websites, you're probably 10, 15 clicks away from actually finding the information you want because they're all set up differently.
Phil Steele at philsteele.com. You can find his college football preview at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million this year. Phil, appreciate you making some time for us, man, on the Morning Rush.
Hey, a lot of fun talking football with you guys this morning. Always enjoy it.